Good evening, and welcome to the Mothball Prophecies. I am your host, Jonathan. Today is special. It's Halloween, and while many festivities are on hold right now due to the pandemic and the virus and whatever political tensions are out there, we're all bracing ourselves for the existential horror of November, I know. But I wanted to do something special for those celebrating at home or perhaps on the road. Something spooky. Something that showcases the amazing talent of the listeners and friends of this podcast. I want to thank everyone who sent in submissions, and tonight's show will feature stories and music to put you in the mood for Halloween. So, without further ado, let's kick off the first ever Mothballoween celebration. Our first story comes from Gilbert Jagot, one of the first listeners of this podcast. Here's the story he sent in. I had been off and on friends, drinking buddies, with this guy for years since we were teens, young adults. Let's call him Alfred. Well, Alfred was an alcoholic drug user, and at one point seemed a little suicidal. Well, less than a year after Hurricane Katrina hit the Louisiana region, I got a call that he had killed himself. I never got the full story, but I think it was over a woman and he shot himself in the head outside of a bar. He wasn't found until the following day. I hadn't spoken to him in a good bit before all of this, and we weren't the bestest of friends, but I still went to his funeral service. And I hate funerals. Too much sadness. I guess it was a few weeks to maybe a few months after that I started having some very realistic dreams, where we were just hanging around and drinking. After a bit of the dream, I'd be like, "Alfred, you can't be here. You're dead." He wouldn't believe me, and I'd explain what I heard had happened. This happened quite a few times, and they were always like he was alive and we were hanging out. After a bit, the dreams stopped. I think he finally got the hint. He was a little hard-headed and stopped visiting me in my dreams. One day, I happened to come across an ex-wife of his, and I mentioned the dreams to her. She said she also had similar dreams shortly after his death. I had heard of deceased people visiting people in their dreams before, and it had only happened to me once before that I can remember. But that dream isn't suited for this podcast, even though it was a ghost dream visit from someone I had never met. Thank you, Gilbert. Not just for taking the leap to participate in tonight's podcast, but also for sharing such a personal experience. You, sir, are among the chosen, and will be receiving some treats in the mail in the near future. Our next entry comes from Randy Michaud, otherwise known as Trog. Randy hosts Stone Grooves and Deep Cuts on Lalaloots Radio, as well as being an excellent musician on the Stone Groove label. Please check out all the links in the show notes. Randy's entry is one that filled me with absolute dread and touched on memories I keep locked away from public light. What he submitted kind of rattled the padlock on that box. I will now play the first part of the larger ambient narrative from the Troglodyte Dawn album titled The Succubus Cycle, available on Bandcamp. So I want you to remove all distractions, turn off the lights, or, if you're still one of the many in New Orleans without power, don't do anything and listen to part one of the Succubus Cycle. Thank you.
She has the evidence of evil in her mouth. She is the pawn. She is the pain. She is the rape. She is the vessel through which greed is evil, enters the world, and comes upon man. She appears feminine and beautiful, but she has been deformed, distorted by her owner. She has learned to draw in her male victims by broadcasting a psychic ruse of helplessness, of vulnerability. And so, sensing the natural protective instinct of the male is aroused. One-sided, she presents the illusion of a perfect balance between seductive evil and sweet innocence. A combination that breeds an almost irresistible attraction in him and ensures she is never wanting for prey. Although there is a palpable nuance of something not quite right about her, which earnestly warns him of peril, the warning goes unheeded. Knowing she has obtained what her frigid and callous heart craves most, she meticulously lays her tender trap, setting out the finest of her counterfeit gifts, the ones she knows will hold him fast and lull him into a sleep state until his mind is deceived enough that he remains in the clutches of his own volition and believes that he needs her in order to live. On the day of reckoning, when she has had him under her sinister spell for a time, he catches a glimpse of her true form and calls her out in a moment of lucidity. Upon being discovered, she strikes with cold precision and ruthless fury at his point of his greatest weakness, his unguarded heart. Kiss turns to gnaw, tender to raw, trust to betrayal, love to indifference, and sex to affliction. Taken by surprise, and without his familiar defenses, he suffers the full impact of her assault and is completely paralyzed by the event. Unable to strike back, he raises hands to protect himself. If she is dead on her mark, he has been so groomed and conditioned for this that he will uncharacteristically display gratitude and assist her as she hacks away at his dwindling life force. She can do no other than to follow her unnatural instinct, to bleed him, to drain him of all he has and all he is through detachment and devaluation. Then leave him hanging in suspension as a final means of torture and punishment for his recognition of her true form. Afterwards, she seems almost unaware, unaffected by her despicable and reprehensible actions, indifferent to the great damage and suffering she has inflicted upon her host, because her ignorance is intrinsic and her emotions retarded. She is shielded from any semblance of remorse. She revises the details of the event in her dark mind, recasts herself as the victim of unspeakable abuses, and justifies herself to her own satisfaction. This spontaneous mechanism allows her to shamelessly embark upon the next desperate pursuit of yet another unknown dupe, whose sole use is to temporarily satiate her gnawing hunger and eternal emptiness. And the cycle continues until such a time as appointed for her to be held accountable for her crimes. For he who endures her despoilment, the utter mess she leaves behind, and the seeds of hatred sown in the gaping heart wound may or may not be worth the price of survival. Her poison input, warped perception, and defilement of his flesh will have disrupted his own discernment, such that for a time he will have to live as though he were in a mirror, appearing to despise that which he loves, and appearing to love that which he despises. If he is able to grasp this paradox and put in an exhausting amount of effort, there is a good possibility that he will recover, though not without deep and lasting scars to remind him of his folly. She has eaten voraciously again and again, and yet still she is empty. In her terror, she pauses, looks down and sees something she has not yet considered. The sauce is herself. Without hesitation, she doubles over and begins to feed upon that which she blindly accepted as her greatest strength and most valued possession. As she tears into her own leathered flesh, she feels the familiar frenzy take over once again. One last sanguine ecstasy as she gorges herself on this final repast. Undoing all as she hovers as close as she ever will to rest and relief. But, as always, this heightened state is only temporary, as her diminishing vessel is no longer able to carry the curse of her existence. Her withered host is reduced to waste, while her wretched essence hangs in the putrid air for but a moment before dissipating into nothingness and to be remembered nevermore.
That was part one of the Succubus Cycle. And don't forget to check out Randy's radio show tonight on Halloween for The Adventures of Harry Eyeball, a collaboration he did with Beth Patterson. Links will be in the show notes. And that brings us to our third entry, sent in from the amazingly talented Beth Patterson herself. In addition to supporting my own weirdness, Beth is someone I consider family. She's a modern-day polymath, an incredible musician, storyteller, lyricist, artist, and author. You can find her music on Bandcamp. Her book, The Wild Harmonic, is available everywhere great paranormal fiction is sold, and you can find her works in a number of anthologies. I will link all of these in the show notes, and I encourage you all to go out and read and listen to everything Beth does. This particular story is titled Nackenschmerzen. Always trust your gut, no matter what anyone says. Remain on guard if a suspicious-looking woman greets you with the telltale signs of monstrosity. A vapid smile that never reaches her unblinking eyes, a string of words embedded with poison, and a tone of voice that implies surprise at seeing you for the first time. By the time you cross paths with her, she will, in fact, have been watching you for a long time. Nackenschmerzen always surveys her prey from afar, for months before setting out on the hunt. If you recognize the warning signs, just get the hell away from her. Do not leave room for pleasantries, for abandoning social mores is by far the lesser of two evils. The Germans, who were the first to record witnessing her nearly a century ago, called her pain in the neck. Just the physical agony she delivers would be enough to debilitate you. It burns like a red-hot poker between the shoulder blades, and before you know it, you will have aged before your body is ready to expire. But the torture doesn't end there. Her words will get under your skin. No, I mean this literally. They permeate your pores and bury themselves subcutaneously until they come in contact with your nerves. Her parasitic tendrils creep up the spinal cord to the amygdala, kicking the fight-or-flight instincts into overdrive. It's only a matter of time before they reach your left temporal lobe and send auditory hallucinations, if, of course, the sounds are indeed just in your head. Once she's taken hold of you, it's best for you to turn down social events, for no one will understand the drastic change in your behavior. Or just take the medicine that paralyzes your tongue and leaves you appearing mellow, perhaps even stoned. Because who's going to believe you anyway? She might leave you alone for a day, a week, maybe even a couple of months if you're lucky. But you'll never know when she might strike again. The suspense is sometimes worse than the suffering. How do I know this? I can assure you that I'm not crazy, and I'm a survivor. I tried to fend her off many years ago, long before the effects forced me to retire from my music career. That fateful night I encountered her began like a typical French Quarter gig. I should have known that there was something wrong with the way the woman at the bar stared me down as I rushed into the venue. I was just grateful to have found parking during the busy tourist season with just enough time to set up for my gig. Backlit against the stage lights, she paced toward me like some sort of predatory insect. I wasn't about to judge her for her wild hair like the muddy roots of a freshly pulled weed, nor for the acid-washed skin-tight jeans she wore. But there was something about how each part of her seemed to move independently, as if she were comprised of many thinking organisms. Her thin painted lips attempted a smile. She stood too close to me for comfort, so I hopped on stage to unload my gear. A sidelong glance was all it took for me to catch her desperate attempt at eye contact.
"I don't understand," she buzzed. "The name on the outside is correct. You used to go out with Larry?
I nodded, not wanting to discuss the gaslighter who took me over a year to shake and a decade to forget.
This doesn't make any sense, she rattled on. Nothing about you matches his description. For one thing, I watched you park around the corner, and he said you can't drive.
Of course I could drive. That is, until Larry had stolen my driver's license and refused to tell me where he'd hidden it until it eventually expired. But why would any sane person go to the effort of watching me park?
Why don't you have a band? Do you play solo because it's the only way you can avoid being the least attractive person on stage? Because that's what everyone says about you.
I refuse to give this bitch the satisfaction of any response whatsoever, so I pretended to ignore her and tune my instrument. By the time I finished my first song, she was gone. But the timbre of her voice buzzed in my ears like a bad cable. I called for a double shot of whiskey before heading to my car. Now, I don't typically drive under the influence, but I was so rattled, the sharpness of the spirit steadied my nerves. Certainly people had done worse things to me while I was working. Why had this unsettled me so? Long after I'd turned the key in my ignition, her words began to vibrate at the base of my skull.
You can't drive. Can't drive.
Perhaps it was just coincidence that this memory distracted me so badly from the road that I hit a pothole, bursting my left front tire. Changing the flat proved to be a Sisyphean endeavor. Getting my car jacked to remain in place on the uneven French Quarter pavement. It didn't take long for me to resort to calling for a tow truck, largely because the passers-by who stopped to point, laugh, catcall me, or even take my picture, and I found myself anxious that the offensive woman would return. My sweet boyfriend picked me up without complaint, and I hoped that the friendly decor of our cheery apartment would soothe me. I lay awake long after he had fallen asleep. Her whispers came seeping into my brain from every direction at once.
If you really loved your boyfriend, you'd leave him so that he can be free to date someone pretty.
Sleep began to elude me immediately. A week went by, and this sudden onset of insomnia still gripped me. After a month of eternal wakefulness, irrational self-loathing had nearly consumed me for my body's sheer inability to do the one basic function I so desperately needed. Gigs became physically excruciating. My upper body was almost too racked with pain to hold an instrument. Fatigue had taken a toll on my voice, and my nerves were raw. I couldn't concentrate on lyrics or chords for lack of sleep, and the terror that the acid-tongued apparition might return. I tried processing it in therapy, but every night the woman's words kept coming like dry leaves rasping across the pavement in a whirlwind.
You can shut me out any time. All you need to do is stop your ears. Use the super glue in the drawer. You'll go deaf, but it's not like anyone will miss your music anyway.
Wait, what? Fill my ears with glue and end my career? Oh, hell no. It was time to fight back. I didn't know where to turn next. I was afraid that consulting a physician would land me with a psychological diagnosis and would render me potentially unemployable or run me into a lifetime of debt. But I thought perhaps my friend Matilda, who was a high priestess, might be able to help me protect myself magically. I don't know why I was surprised when the priestess knew exactly what I was dealing with. You have attracted the attention of Nackenschmerzen, she told me offhandedly, as if diagnosing a common cold. I haven't heard her name since I was a little girl in Germany. Write down the human name she has been assigned and stick it in your freezer. That should cool her off. Freeze her in her tracks. I'll create a wax effigy and will also bind her. If she comes around again, stick a pin in the poppet's neck. This should reverse the effects, making her suffer threefold. It was a comfort to spend the afternoon in Matilda's kitchen, sipping coffee and petting her dogs, and my pain in the neck was almost manageable. But I knew I was eventually going to have to get home and act normal until the time was right. Surreptitiously freezing her name was easy to do, as my boyfriend was always working in his office. The heart-pounding task was to lie down as if to sleep, which I hadn't been able to do since Nackenschmerzen first attacked me. As reliable as the sun rising and setting, the voices came.
You could just kill yourself now, but if you try starving yourself to death, you might at least have a shot of looking thin and pretty before you die.
I said stop! I jammed the pin into the effigy, certain that this spell would stop her once and for all. The immediate effect was the opposite. I fell to the floor like a rag doll, unable to hold back a moan of pain. My boyfriend came running from his office and checked me for wounds, but there was no blood on my neck, no broken skin. I made one attempt to tell the man I loved about this monster, but he dismissed me so harshly that I held my tongue. By this time, the symptoms I couldn't prove were no longer wrecking my career. They were also straining our relationship, and I knew I had to fight this battle in silence without him. I made an emergency appointment the following day to see if I might have suffered a pressure fracture, but there was none. I had an invisible 5-stone albatross around my neck, and nobody could see it. I reported these new incidents to Matilda, and it dawned on her where we went wrong. We checked records on the internet, looking for reports of people who had seen her. To our horror, we discovered that Nackenschmerzen had begun to replicate herself long after the priestess had heard childhood tales. In 1952, a woman from Berlin had watched her divide like a cell, becoming a pair of twin little girls. 2 days later, another man in Spain saw a quartet of knee-high blood-sucking gnomes split into 16 hungry bats. And so it went, until she became a million infinitesimal mites that attack your nerves if they break through your skin, like Lyme disease or rabies. But unlike a disease, she is very self-aware. Many versions of her lurk everywhere. Her many microscopic components pull themselves together to form a human shape. There is no telling how many variations of this corporeal virus are currently at large. Don't ever discuss her with your friends. It only increases her power. If you've already been infected, the sound of my voice could be transmitting it deeper into your nervous system. But if you haven't encountered her yet, don't let my words get under your skin. Even though I already know where you live, there's still time for you to go into hiding. Why is there such sudden tension in your shoulders? Don't worry, you'll figure out what to do. After all, the mind relishes challenges. Let me whisper into your ear to keep your brain fluid. You, dear listeners, may interpret that any way you wish. That was Nackenschmerzen, by Beth Patterson. And that story is one that I certainly related to, especially on those late nights staring at the ceiling when one's brain decides to perform an audit full of reproaches that aren't even your own. If you like this, I highly urge you to check out her other stories. Beth's imagination, real-life experiences, and the in-depth research she does for her stories will leave you spellbound. So Beth, Randy, Gilbert, you are among the chosen in this year's Mothballoween celebration. Thank you for playing along, and thank you, the audience, for listening. Now, our time together is drawing to a close, but there is still one more installment to take with you into the night. To send you, my listeners, into All Hallows' Eve, here is the second half of Randy Michaud's Succubus Cycle.
She has the evidence of evil in her mouth. She is the pawn. She is the pain. She is the rape. She is the vessel in which grievous evil enters the world and comes upon man. Thank you. A combination that breeds an almost irresistible attraction in him. That ensures she is never wanting for prey.
Spell for a time. He catches a glimpse of a true form. with color precision. Beautiful, scary, and his point of his great sweetness. His unguided heart. His turns to gnaw. Tender to raw. Trust to betrayal. Love to indifference, and sex to affliction. Take you by surprise, and without his familiar defenses, he suffers the full impact of her assault, and is completely paralyzed by the event. Unable to strike back, but raises hands to protect himself. Thank you. revise the details of the event in a dark mind. Recast yourself as the victim of unspeakable abuses and justifies yourself to your own satisfaction. This spontaneous mechanism allows you to shamelessly embark upon the next desperate pursuit of yet another unknown dupe, whose sole use is to temporarily satiate her gnawing hunger and eternal emptiness. She has eaten voraciously again and again. And yet, still, she is empty.
Thank you for joining me on this, the first Mothballoween celebration. We will, of course, have more of these in the near future, and, of course, every year on Halloween, so long as there is a Halloween. So, if this inspired you to share your story with our listeners, just send it to mothball@crescentcitymedia.com. Again, next week, I am taking off. I am not doing a show next week because everyone's going to be paying attention to the news or trying to do everything they can not to come in contact with the news. But the week after that, we will be back with something weird, strange, possibly insightful, but definitely psychedelic for you to listen to. Until then, my friends, sleep tight.